It feels like it belongs to someone else. That shield represents a lot of things to a lot of people. Symbols are nothing without the women and men that give them meaning. We need someone to inspire us again.
The world's more complicated now.
You're never gonna stop. This world is ours. There's no going back.
It doesn't have to be a war.
It already is.
We can't lose this fight. If we do this, we're gonna do it our own way.
So we're partners, co-workers.
Not necessarily a team.
No.
We look damn good, though.
Hello and welcome to a special review episode of FW Presents, the wokest show on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm Ryan Daly, and joining me to discuss the recently completed Disney Plus series from Marvel Studios, Black Falcon and the White Wolf, are two Fire and Water all-stars. The irredeemable Shag. Hello, Shag.
Don't call me Val.
And Chris Franklin. What's up, Chris?
I'm doing that John Walker neck twitch. You just can't see it.
We are talking about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or possibly Captain America and the Winter Soldier. I don't know exactly what the show's official title is now by the end of
the spoilers. Card.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, for anybody who's tuning in to listen to this, this is going to be a spoiler-ridden review of all six episodes that are available on Disney Plus, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. If you haven't seen the show yet, I honestly don't care. You can listen to the show without watching it. It's fine. You're just going to find out everything that's in the show. But, yeah, go see it anyway.
Ryan's empathy runs deep, folks.
Yes.
At this point, spoilers. People know what they're reading when they get it. Okay.
The people we know got spoiled by their Facebook feed, so, I mean, geez.
The funny thing is, when they first, before the show was officially announced, when it was just kind of in the ether, when it was teased, after Avengers Endgame, I heard that the title was Captain America and the Winter Soldier, because it was assumed, you know, Steve's giving the shield over to Sam. He's going to be the new Captain America. So I was like, all right, they're picking up with that. And then eventually they said it's going to be Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I was like, okay, he's not Cap yet. The show is going to be sort of the learning curve, him accepting it, him taking on the mantle and the journey to get to that point.
I think you could see that in the interviews too. My memory, and it could be a little fuzzy, was, you know, Anthony Mackie gave interviews after Endgame talking about being, you know, the next Captain America and stuff. And then very quickly all the interviews changed where he's like, no, I'm the Falcon. I'm not Captain America. And I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, that's a plot point. Okay, never mind.
I was going to say, you know, it would be weird if it was officially called Captain America and the Winter Soldier, because we had a movie called Captain America : the Winter Soldier. But then, you know what? Look at the Rambo franchise. Look at the way they titled those movies. That makes no sense. Speaking of, like, the interviews and all the stuff that happened before the show came out, what were your guys' impressions going into the series? What were your expectations going into the series? What had you heard? What did you think? What were you hoping to see? Chris, start it off. Like, what did you think going into the series, or what were you looking for?
Well, I think early on I heard that, John Walker was going to be involved. So I'm like, ah, okay, so that, and that kind of explained what you guys were talking about, that Anthony Mackie had swerved from saying, oh, I'm Captain America. No, wait, I'm still the Falcon. So I'm like, ah, okay, so somehow the government's going to step in and give the shield to John Walker, because I was reading Captain America, you know, back in the 80s when the John Walker storyline happened, when Steve gave up the shield because the government wanted him to become their tool, basically, and they appointed the Patriot, John Walker, as the new Cap. And so I'm like, oh, okay, you know, that's what's going to happen here. So the basic story arc of there's a substitute Captain America, I didn't realize, you know, that Sam was actually going to willingly give up the shield, but without knowing that somebody else was going to use it. But yeah, so I knew that. And so that set up some anticipation because, you know, that storyline is the, sorry, folks, that's the better version of Nightfall. it's the original version of Nightfall, and sorry, the better version of Nightfall. So I was like, oh, that's great. That's a great story. It's kind of weird to do it without Chris Evans and Steve Rogers, but okay, it'll work. And then, you know, I heard Zemo was involved, and I'm like, oh, that should be interesting, you know. And I was just excited because, you know, Sharon Carter was coming back. So I was like, this is a good mix of actors, of characters, of established characters. And, you know, we're going to get to see where, you know, Bucky and Sam have those great scenes in the films in Civil War. And so I was just like, okay, I was really looking forward to this. And we'll get into that, but I just expected it to be a great action romp. I don't know why I didn't think it might be more than that, but I just didn't. So that's where I was.
I'll echo a lot of what Chris said. I wasn't expecting the story to be as deep as it was. It made me think and question as much as it did. I'm glad it did. Going in, though, you know, I was going to hold out. I was not going to get Disney Plus. I was like, I don't spend another blah, blah, blah. But Falcon and Winter Soldier was the one thing that actually made me like, oh, man, I really kind of wish I had it. Eventually, I buckled because of Mandalorian. But Falcon and Winter Soldier is the one that made me think twice about it. And it was as good as I could have hoped for. I expected more of an action thing. Now, Chris, like you, or opposite of you, I did not read the Captain story growing up. I was certainly familiar with it. I was reading lots of Marvel comics. I remember Steve Rogers showing up in the Captain costume quite a bit in various stories, but I wasn't actually reading Captain America, so I never read that story. I was certainly familiar with it, and I followed U.S. Agents' adventures across, you know, Avengers West Coast and Forceworks and Omega Flight and lots of places. Like, I've actually followed that character a lot, but I never had actually read his history. I knew it, but I never read it. So I actually read it in between episodes 5 and 6 of this series. So I've read the whole thing now. And I will say, you're right, it is a better version of Nightfall. I think the ending of Nightfall is probably better, because the end of here, Walker just goes, you're better than me as Captain America. Here you go. And gives it up, just walks away. It was a very non-confrontational ending. But I guess the bottom line is I was expecting an action adventure show, and I got something a lot more, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah, to the point about the Captain storyline, for anybody who wants to read it, Marvel is going to be reprinting that run from Mark Gruenwald's era on Captain America in their Epic Collection line, and it's going to come out, I think, around July, probably for 4th of July, like that time. So that whole story arc is getting a big reprint pretty soon. This is another example of, you know, this might sound blasphemous for people who love comics like us, who grew up loving these comics and have often had to defend comics as an art form and as a medium, at least in our minds, when people kind of besmirch the comic book. And you know, we want the movies and the TV shows and the adaptations to be more faithful to the comics. Marvel is now getting to the point where I actually like some of their movies and adaptations better than the actual source material in the comics. It started with Civil War, when I did not like that particular comic, but I love the movie Captain America Civil War. Now, it was not a straight linear adaptation of the book. It took kind of the premise, but the movie was told from a different perspective with different themes and different plot points. And even like the way the movies handled Thanos' quest and the Infinity Gauntlet, I like a little bit better than the comics. I wish we'd gotten Silver Surfer and Adam Warlock, but I miss their absence, but I like the movies more than that storyline. when the comics did, you know, when Steve was aged and had to give up being Captain America and he gave it to Sam Wilson, I didn't like that turn of events. I didn't like that. Obviously because I'm racist and you know, I hate the SJWs. No, but it was because I have always liked the character of the Falcon. I think he's probably the first black superhero I ever recognized or knew. And it was just because I had seen a picture of his Secret Wars figure. I mean, the Magos were before me. I didn't know he had a Mago figure until years later. But
in that great commercial.
Yeah. He had that great black superhero. but I knew he had a Secret Wars figure, even though he wasn't in the Secret Wars comic. So that felt important to me. And when I started reading their adventures, Falcon never felt like Captain America's sidekick to me. He wasn't unequal, but he was more of a partner. And I felt like one hero passing the mantle of his, you know, his superhero identity to another one, that was a legacy thing. That was what heroes did with their sidekicks. That was what Barry did to when Wally West picked up the Flash mantle and Dick Grayson picked up Batman or something like that. It was understood that the sidekick would grow into that role. But to me, Falcon wasn't that would be more like if Green Arrow died and Black Canary was expected to pick up the bow and arrow. It's like, no, that's not her gig. That's not what she does. So that's always kind of how I felt about Falcon becoming the Captain America. I was like, that's not his trajectory. So I didn't like it in the comics at first. And then I watched this show, and I see played out over 6 hours what I knew intellectually. I hadn't really thought about it, was that there is so much work that you can find and so much great material just from exploring the question of what does it mean to have a black Captain America? What does it mean for the symbol of America? What does it mean for white culture? What does it mean for black culture? Just all of the narrative ground and the fertile like places that where you can just like mine that there's just so much story potential there and character growth. So it was an idea that I didn't like in the comics, but I loved the way it played out over the TV show.
I want to echo what you said about the comics in the source material. You know, I just mentioned I read that Captain trade paperback. This is where Chris's head explodes. Well, I enjoyed a lot of the themes that were in that book, which are reflected in the show. The racism, the patriotism, the duty, the honor, all these things are reflected in the show. The comics really got a lot of silly elements in it. I mean, just the Serpent Society, as much as I love them, they're goofy. You know, the Watchdogs, they're goofy. And it's like Mark Wernwald took all these really deep, thought-provoking topics and wrapped it in a very like 1970s, 1980s, Bronze Age, very stereotypical comic for boys. And so it's interesting that I agree with you, Ryan, which rarely happens, that I think that the movies surpass the source material quite often, actually.
Oh, I agree with you there, too. I mean, I mean, honestly, at this point, I feel like the MCU is almost the DCAU for the DC universe. It's the better version, you know. At this point, to me, and yeah, there's a lot of goofy, silly Jim Shooter, Tom DeFalco era Marvel tropes in those Gruenwald comics. You know, this is definitely more of a grounded, grittier version because it is shot through that lens of the, you know, Ed Brubaker, Steve Eptig, Winter Soldier comics that the Winter Soldier movie, you know, was made after. And this series very much feels like that movie. It's like the Civil War's got some of that too, but obviously it's got, you know, a lot of straight up superhero action. But this show feels more like that movie. So it's literally like they kind of, if they could somehow smash Mark Gruenwald and Ed Brubaker together, they somehow did. That's like peanut butter and ketchup, but it somehow works, you know?
Oh my gosh.
All right, let's go through some of the characters that we see through this one. Obviously, the big ones are the title characters, and we'll start with Sam Wilson, who begins his journey as the Falcon. The show opens up with a great Falcon action sequence. of him with his jetpack and wingsuit flying. Great action sequence there, fighting against Batroc Zelipers, his people. But by
That's
the end of the
Siskoid's guy, right?
Yeah. By the end favorite. Of the show, he is now in the full uniform with the new Wakandan made Captain America costume with wings and the shield. So, what did we think about Sam Wilson's journey throughout this show?
You know, I liked Anthony Mackie as Sam from the get-go in Winter Soldier, and I love the arc they gave him. I mean, that has to be like just – it's so – I bet she's like, man, Chris, I'm glad you retired, you know, Chris Evans. Because he got such a great role in this. And I just love – and again, we didn't say this. We were talking about it before we got on. This is three white guys talking about a black man's experience as he goes through this journey. So, you know, pardon us. We're trying to be open-minded, but you know, as we can, and but we just literally just jumped on a call together. We probably should have put up the Captain America signal for some other input. But
you're right, it's a little bit like Bucky, where Bucky says, "I couldn't possibly know what it meant to be the Black Captain America," and that's what you're saying, Chris. I think right. If you don't mind me jumping in and trying to help you out there, it's like that's what we're trying to say is we get. That we don't have the life experience to speak to this, but you know what? I think we were all still moved by the story.
Yeah. And I mean the showrunners and the writers, which were predominantly black, they did a great job of, you know, getting that point across to, you know, me, you know, the white comic book fan, that, you know, Sam's, I mean, the fact that the man is like literally helped save the universe, can't get a damn bank loan. That the man is, you know, they walk up, the police come up to him and Bucky in the street and they ask Bucky, is this guy bothering you? Mm-hmm. Until they realize he's you're the Falcon, you know, it's okay because you're the Falcon. If you're another black guy, it wouldn't be okay. You know, that type of stuff. I mean, it's just the story. I mean, the interactions with his sister and his nephews, which was great, and just grounding him in you know, the Louisiana and the, you know, the family business. And I mean, they fleshed out his character so well, but I love that just pretty much his whole approach to everything in this series goes back to how we met him in the Winter Soldier as someone who was counseling soldiers with PTSD. I mean, that his role in that is so important to how he's going to move forward as Captain America. I mean, the speech he gives at the end, you know, I mean, he that comes from, you know, him talking things through the whole series. He tried to talk Carly out of everything she was doing, you know, while everybody wanted to literally beat the hell out of each other. He was trying to get everybody to calm down and just have a conversation, which I think, I mean, hell, that's bold. You know, that's a bold way to go with a character, with a hero, with your main hero. So, I mean, I thought Anthony Mackie killed it. And I think somebody else online said, it might have been our buddy Tom Pannery said, you know, under other hands, that speech may have come off as cheesy that he gives at the end. But you never doubt it for a minute. He's so damn sincere. He's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing him in the other MCU movies and could tell immediately from those films and from just various interviews. I'm like, okay, this guy's leading man material. Anthony Mackie is leading man material. And so that's part of the reason I was so excited when the series got announced. I'm like, okay, he can lead a show. Absolutely. So seeing him, especially you, Chris, you touched on it. The developing of his family is what really hit home to me. I may be just wrapped up in the moment, but he might be the most fully realized character in the entire MCU. As far as who, you know, we know who his family is. We know about his upbringing. We understand his sister, his nephew, the hardships of jobs. Like, now maybe with Black Widow, we'll find out about her family. But other than like Hawkeye, I don't know anyone that I can tell you if they have a brother or a sister or what their relationship with their parents were. None of them. They're a hero and they're there in that moment. But I don't know a lot about them otherwise. And so I feel like he's incredibly realized as a real character. And, you know, sometimes he makes the wrong choice. Not, he doesn't always make the right choice. And that's good, too. He was absolutely amazing. I was completely wrapped up in him as a character. And I think, Chris, speaking to what you said as far as the big speeches and trying to make people see eye to eye, you know, that probably comes from his years as a counselor. Because remember, he was, mm-hmm. you know, counseling the vets and stuff like that. So that's part of that, I think, is part of the reason why he wants to talk things through.
I think just in especially the last two episodes, episodes 5 and 6, when we see how much he is a part of his community down in Louisiana, and just like the whole gathering on the docks when they're working on the boat, or when they come together at the very end during like the ending montage and everything, that is something that is we haven't seen. I mean, we know that Hawkeye has this family in a farmhouse out somewhere, and Steve Rogers had his apartment in New York where he lived alone, or in DC, and Tony had his mansion overlooking the Pacific Ocean and everything. They were all kind of very isolated, kind of of their own worlds, whereas Sam is, he has this family and this community that he is part of. And even when he becomes a world-famous global icon Captain America superhero, I mean, he's already a well-known superhero before that as the Falcon. But even just taking on that, he doesn't isolate himself. He doesn't shut himself off, you know, to protect his loved ones. He's still there on the docks, working on the boat, you know, grilling like shrimp and seafood with his family and friends. I thought that was very, very, very interesting. I also think, I mean, looking at his experience and the weight, I mean, it, like, I was shocked when the show starts off with him giving away the shield. I was like, Steve Rogers trusted you. He gave you this. Like, I was reacting the same way that Bucky was. I was like, how could you do this? Like, that just, it felt like a betrayal, because I didn't understand where he was coming from, the same way Steve and Bucky didn't understand. We didn't know those experiences. And I think it took meeting Isaiah Bradley in the second episode, when it's like, oh shit, okay. there is something more to this that we need to really kind of look at and think about the limits of our own experience and our own perceptions. And this show is going to explore something. And then when Isaiah came back in episode 5, when they had their talk, and without making it super obvious, without doing the direct comparisons, as Isaiah is talking, and it's like, oh my God, he did everything that Steve Rogers did, but Steve got to be the hero, and this guy was thrown in jail. Steve got to go back in time and spend his life with the woman he loved. Isaiah never had that. It's like, oh, it was crushing. It was crushing. Yeah. And it's like, oh man, so.
Before I forget, touch on an issue. You brought up a question earlier about the action. And I just wanted to say, we actually had a conversation about this offline, about the action. You know, a lot of these big budget Hollywood productions, the action, it just keeps going and going. And after a while, you just get desensitized to it. Well, this action, especially in the first episode, I was completely engaged. Every moment, every single thing Sam did, every flip, every fly through the air, every kick, whatever, I was totally into it. At no point did I become desensitized to the action at all. So I felt like the action was intense. I felt like it had real life consequences, because again, also, they weren't fighting for the survival of the planet. I mean, ultimately, maybe they were, but it was, you know, no, I'm stopping this one bad guy right now, right here. Mm-hmm. And after the scope of like Endgame, it's kind of nice to bring it down to a little more Earth size scale. Anyway, I was completely engaged in it, and it felt real and it felt threatening, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think the way they shot it, and they made everything look like they had to work at it, like that Bucky had to work at it, that Sam had to work at it, that it wasn't just everything they did what didn't come easy, you know. And that kept you engaged. It was the combination of the fight choreography and the actors and the stuntmen, everything that just came together to show that this is tough. This is, you know, they don't know if they're going to get out of this. And it wasn't just, oh, it's a pretty action sequence, and then we'll, you know, then we'll get to some talkie-talkie, then back to some action. Like you said, Shag, I was totally, every time they had an action sequence, I was totally, completely invested in it.
One of the things that actually, on a smaller level, that I really, really liked and really impressed me, at the end of the 5th episode, when Sam has his training montage, when he's practicing with the shield, because that's a big deal, the fact that he and actually, that was one thing that I did want to come back to. Frequently in the show, Sam is the least powerful person in the screen. In a lot of his scenes, especially the action scenes, he's the one guy who doesn't have super strength or speed or something like that. And he has to hold his own either through tricks or through the power of the jetpack in the suit or something like that, or as Shaggy were mentioning, trying to just have a conversation, trying to de-escalate and you know, diffuse a situation through conversation. That is the power. And that's what he says at the end. His superpower is his belief that we can always do better, and he wants to try and communicate that. But yeah, just seeing him train, seeing him run and flip and like throw the shield, and how many times it takes him before he can catch it and look graceful while he's doing it. But his kind of, I don't even know what sort of martial art it would be compared to, but like his kind of like parkour, like flips and jumps as he's doing these things. I like that just because it's like, yeah, he has his own style. He brings a unique fighting ability and a kind of fluidity that is different than Steve or any of the other heroes that we've seen. It makes him unique. It gives him kind of a physical fighting signature that's going to be a little bit cool and different going forward. So I really like even something as simple as that.
They did something. It got so many things. We're all over the board here. I apologize because there's so many things to talk about bursting in our heads. Couple quick things. So first off, I don't think it's an accident that Sam and Battlestar were the two characters that didn't have Super Soldier Serum, and everyone else did. I don't think that's an accident at all. Second of all, with the shield, you know, you mentioned then the technique. I don't know if you guys noticed in the last episode, John Walker had his own technique with the shield, almost like a hatchet. He used it to chop constantly, kept chopping. So he had his own style with the shield, which was interesting. And then finally, the other point I want to make was the shield itself. I didn't realize this till after it was over, and I just started thinking about it. The shield itself was essentially Steve Rogers in the show. I mean, every time, because before the shield wasn't, I mean, Captain America carried the shield. We all loved it, but they didn't make that big a deal, the shield, really. It was just part of his arsenal, right? Captain America was the symbol. But now the shield has basically become the representation of Steve Rogers. And I like that it's a way for that character to kind of carry on, and it you know, the shield itself carries a value now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though it's not his original shield, which is weird. Where did that shield come from? Because his original shield was destroyed, and it looks different. I mean, if you look at it, it's got more lines on it. And so it's like, where did that shield come from at the end of Endgame? So we'll probably never know, but who knows?
the snap.
Yeah. Or it just comes from a different time period or something. But...
Right, different timeline. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our other title character, James Buchanan Barnes, Bucky the Winter Soldier, or White Wolf, or as I want to call him by the end of the series, Uncle Whitey, just because he's playing Sam's nephews. So.
He might be stepdad Whitey if things keep moving.
Hey, Sam, do not flirt with my sister. Yeah. What did we think about Bucky through the story?
With Bucky, you know, it was interesting. Where were they going to go with Bucky? And of course, there was always that, you know, well, maybe they're going to do a swerve and Bucky will be Captain America, because, you know, Bucky was obviously Captain America in the comics right before Sam was. I think Steve came back in between, but who can keep up anymore? But, but you know, like, well, you know, and at times, you know, there were a few moments where Bucky even said, you know, well, if I knew you were going to give it up, I would have kept it, basically, you know. But I really like that they didn't take the easy way out and just say, okay, he was deprogrammed, he's fine now, he spent 2 years in Wakanda, he's okay. No, Bucky's far from okay. You know, the fact that, you know, they had his therapist and the, you know, his friend that he kept, his older friend that he kept seeing, and then you found out, oh God, what happened with the guy's son, and that it was Bucky that, you know, as a Winter Soldier that killed this guy's son. And, you know, Bucky was trying to make amends. He had Steve's book that had all his things to check out, like Trouble Man and, you know, by Marvin Gaye and things like that. But now he was using it as a ledger to, you know, scratch off names of people that he felt like he'd made up for the fact of what he had done as the Winter Soldier. And I really thought that was a great way to go. And then the scene where him and Sam are both in with his therapist after, I think they were arrested at that point, and, you know, and they're, you know, she forces them to basically talk it out. And when he says, you know, you giving up the shield, then, you know, if I, you know, basically, like, if Steve was wrong, then, and you're wrong, then I gotta be wrong too. And I mean, just, you know, like his whole, you know, Bucky basically had to like rebuild his life, and they actually, I don't think he's done, which I think is nice that they didn't make it pat, that he's still got a ways to go, but the journey he had wasn't as, you know, it definitely wasn't as developed as Sam's, I don't think, but it was well done. And, you know, Sebastian Stan's just got a, he's got a very likable quality, you know, I've, you know, from, it was nice to see him kind of come back more to the Bucky character he was in the first Avenger. He's kind of leaning back into that, which I thought was nice. You know, he, if you compare his trajectory over the movies, he's kind of got a little bit more of that first Avenger personality back.
I definitely noticed that.
Being the Winter Soldier, which is a great nuance on Sebastian Stan's part, that he, you know, I'm going back, you know, 10 years to my first take at this character and bringing a little bit of that back. So yeah, it was great.
Sebastian Stan has made me really, really like this character through a lot of his performance, and just he's very charismatic. Chris, as you mentioned, there's something instantly just kind of likable about him. And yeah, I was happy. I also, because not really knowing where his character might go or what use, what value he might have without Steve Rogers in the picture, going into the show, I was wondering if he would actually survive. I kind of thought that they could kill him off in this series, you know, give him like a nice redemptive kind of hero's death. But I kind of, because I didn't, I wasn't sure that this would end up becoming like the buddy cop bromance that it was, and that these two guys who started off just as they had a friend of a friend, or, you know, they had a mutual, you know, brother in arms in Steve Rogers. But when you took him out, like the only thing that brought them together then was trying to preserve Steve's legacy and preserve the memory of him. That's what brings them together. But they certainly weren't friends. And by the end of it, they totally are, and they love each other, and it's great. And I did like that evolution. But the other thing about his character that I posted this on Twitter after the fifth episode, I think, is that the arc and a lot of the characteristics and mannerisms that we've got to see through Bucky over the years are very similar to a lot of the characteristics that fans recognize in Wolverine from the comics and the Fox X-Men movies. So I kind of wonder, whenever the MCU introduces the X-Men characters and the mutants, I was like, is Wolverine now going to feel like a second-rate Winter Soldier? they're going to have to do something different with his character, or just skip Logan altogether and just like have Laura as X-23 or the female Wolverine in order to avoid the comparisons. But yeah, overall, I mean, he's a likable character and a great backup, a great friend. You know, he's the guy you want in your corner once his head is on straight. And I did like that they finally kind of gave him that moment when he could go to see his friend and confess his sins. And Chris, you brought this back to Sam being the counselor. He's like, you can't just do this to make yourself feel better. If you really want to be able to sleep at night, you've got to make them feel better. You've got to be a servant to them. And that only comes with, you know, being honest and letting them know what happened. So yeah.
Do the work theme was really prevalent throughout the whole thing. I mean, every character was doing the work in order to earn the role they eventually would end up in. Yeah.
With one exception that we'll come back to.
Okay. All right. So for me, the actor is so darn likable on screen. He's just, you guys mentioned the charisma. You can't help but love this character, regardless of where his head is. You just can't help love him. And by the end, yeah, well, what a great buddy combo. I mean, just best friends, buddy cop, you know, Beast and Wonder Man kind of buddy level, blue and the gold, whatever. They're a fantastic superhero duo that I just felt incredibly strongly about. And I did wonder by the end, when the title of the show changes to Captain America Winter Soldier, I thought, you know, would they change the title to Captain America and White Wolf? Because they hinted at the White Wolf name. They didn't really play with it much. But, I mean, if you think about it, the Winter Soldier, that name to us is just the name of a movie. But in that world, that's a bad, bad, bad name.
Yeah.
That name is a bad person. And so for him not to actively seek another superhero name just seemed kind of weird. And that kind of wanted me to lead to a different discussion a little bit too, of consequences in this series. This is one of the big downfalls, I think, of the series for me. Not downfall. That's unfair. Just one of the things they didn't handle as well as they could have. It's consequences. First of all, like Bucky, honestly, he should just be in jail. Regardless of the programming or not programming, whatever, he murdered a lot of people and the government knows that. So he should not be in therapy. He should be in jail. I love the therapy scenes. I loved all of that. But that consequence doesn't make sense. Continuing down the con, and I'm going to just shoot through a whole bunch of them here, and this may lead to a longer conversation. I don't know. Like Zemo, when Zemo kills the super soldier chemist, you know, and then Bucky and Falcon just forgive him. That's a, what? Really? They got back in the car with him and went off? I'm like, no, they beat the crap out of them or whatever. Then Zemo getting arrested by the Wakandans. How come he didn't go back to Wakanda? Why did he go to the raft? You know, Wakanda has a real big beef with him. You think they would take him out? Then at the end, Bucky and Sam, why aren't they in bar behind bars for breaking Zemo out of jail? You know, that's oops, that's a big no-no. And then Walker, you know, by the end, they're, you know, Walker's there sort of like he's their buddy almost by the end. He's the guy in their circle of friends that nobody likes, but they just kind of accept by the end. No, he needed at least a few more episodes of redemptive arc before I can accept him as the jerk of the group. He's not the jerk of the group. He's a bad dude right now. He's a guy on the edge who's going to kill someone at this, you know, at the wrong snap of the fingers. That's probably not good phrase for Marvel MCU, but anyway, it just, the consequence wasn't there for him either. So I felt like that was one of the problems of the show is the consequences didn't follow through for a lot of characters. So, but love Bucky though.
Well, okay. So then I want to skip ahead to another character then, because I do the whole consequences thing brings me to, I do want to talk about John Walker then, Captain America and US agent, because, you know, as you were talking about the whole theme of putting in the work and doing that work and on how central that is to the characters. I don't know if that's necessarily true for John Walker, because I think a lot of his story arc and his maybe his problem is the sense of entitlement. And I definitely think that is a deliberate theme and a contrast between another white man carrying the shield and Sam. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that in terms of, because again, he murders somebody on you know, in public with the shield, and the consequences of that are he is stripped of the title, stripped of the rank, he loses the shield, loses the costume, but he comes back, has like one good fight scene, one sort of heroic deed with the heroes at the end, and seems to be forgiven rather easily. Mm-hmm. And also gets like this little kind of promotion, and like his last words are, you know, like I'm back or something like that, you know, like when he's talking to his wife after the scene with the Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Well done, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Woof.
So I kind of wonder, like, I mean, the purpose of John Walker is very much as a foil, which I think a lot of people who did not understand his character throughout this series and were either hating him for the wrong reasons or loving him for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you kind of underneath, it'll help when you see his whole character trajectory by the end of the series, but I also think he was specifically supposed to be the guy that everything comes easier to him, and he kind of expects that, or maybe he doesn't expect it to come easy, but he feels like he's being treated unfairly when it doesn't go his way. So what did you guys think about John Walker in this?
Yeah, I agree. I think his whole personality is he's very impatient through the whole thing. You know, he's like, he expects, because he's got the Captain America uniform on, when he walks in the room, everything's just supposed to drop into his lap. You know, he's super frustrated. I mean, when the one guy spits on him, I mean, I thought he was going to take the dude's head off, you know, and that was early. And that's like the first. But that one thing I kind of wish they got into more too, and obviously John Walker is suffering from PTSD of his own or something. I mean, he's always, you know, they do that weird droning sound, and they show Wyatt Russell like blink like really fast and shake his head like I joked about at the beginning of the episode, jerk his neck, and there's something going on with that guy. And they talk about, you know, how, you know, him and Lamar lost a lot of troops at some point, and if they'd had the super soldier serum, they wouldn't have, and that's one reason why he takes it. So I appreciate the fact that they made him a complex character that you can actually understand. He wasn't just, you know, mustache twirling a-hole. You know, I mean, he obviously served his country, he was highly decorated, but, you know, there's something off about that guy. And like you said, Ryan, there is something to be said for, I mean, even Lamar kind of, you know, intimates that, you know, he was kind of the big man on campus in high school. They were back at his high school football field, and like he was the guy that everything just came easy to, and then he just couldn't cut it as Captain America without losing it, you know, basically. And I thought that was an interesting way to go in a parallel to Sam, who's literally, you know, working his ass off and trying to, you know, trying to use his own skills to diffuse all these situations one way or another. Him getting another chance after he probably honestly really didn't deserve it does say a lot. You know, but honestly, moving forward, I'm really looking forward to where they go with that character, because we don't have Shaggy's kind of a Guy Gardner. You
absolutely
know?
A Guy Gardner. Yes.
Yeah. He's a Guy Gardner in the MCU. And I mean, he's not, he's probably a little bit less of a jerk than Guy is sometimes portrayed, a little bit less. I mean, I think he's a little bit more likable. He seems to be, and he's not, thank God. I saw some people like refer to him as, like they called him a white supremacist on something. It's like his best friend's black and his wife's like Latino, or, you know, she's not like super, you know, she's not like Lily White Caucasian. I don't know what the character is supposed to be, but he's not that. He's not that deplorable of a person, but he's not Steve Rogers by any means either. So I thought that was really interesting to drop this guy in. Of course, a lot of people think it's going to lead to the Thunderbolts or the Dark Avengers, and you know, we can get into that, but yeah, so he was a interesting character, and I liked the way they portrayed him, and I thought Wyatt Russell did a fantastic job with it. I wasn't aware of the guy other than he's Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son, and I know some people gave him some crap in like the first episode because his face looked all smashed up in the helmet, but
the camera angle didn't do him any favors in
it
that
did
shot.
Not but man, there were some times that he just sounded like his dad, and like when he got upset when they were stripping him of his title and everything, I'm like, damn, if you close your eyes, you can hear Kurt Russell. You can just imagine Kurt Russell's like yelling at somebody. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was, you know, I love Kurt Russell, so that was kind of cool too. But on his own, he did a fantastic job with this.
I'll be brief because I a lot of what I'll say I'll echo Chris, and I really want to save more time for Isaiah. But I will say that I didn't know Wyatt existed. I didn't know he was even on this planet until the moment I saw him in the role. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's amazing. He's a great actor. I love the character's super complex and interesting. I love what he did with the role. And echo you, Brian. Yeah, he's absolutely supposed to represent white entitlement. Absolutely. Because he comes in, he thinks he's in charge just because somebody said he should be. And it's absolutely supposed to and the fact that he kills a guy and gets off with a slap on the wrist. So it's absolutely supposed to represent that. And I think that's helps forward the story. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And I think
him not getting in trouble, I don't mean there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think it's fine that it's in the story. I think it's representative of the real world. That's what I was trying to say.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And I think it's like the one sort of contrast between not just him and Sam, but him and Steve Rogers. And I think it kind of speaks to something that Zemo, of all people, says when he's talking about the people who want the super soldier serum are the people who want to be better, that sort of power fantasy and to be better. It's is sort of inherent in like this idea of domination and being stronger and using might over all things. And he says it's natural for that type of power to lead to a sort of supremacist thinking. And they call him on it. They're like, well, Steve Rogers wasn't anything like that. And he's like, you're right, he wasn't. And Baron Zemo actually gives him that much of a respect. He's like, yeah, he seems to be the exception that proves the rule. And I think the difference between Steve and John as white Captain America from like military background, other than the fact that, you know, it's almost 100 years between, you know, when they're training, Steve didn't grow up in the shadow of these heroes and didn't, you know, grow up like wanting to, like idolizing that and wanting to be that, something like that. And he never thought that he was special or that he was owed anything. He fought really, really hard just to contribute, just to be part of the team. He was never supposed to be the one true Captain America. He was a test subject that was supposed to be the first of hundreds. Whereas John wanted to be the best soldier, thought he was the best soldier, and it wasn't about necessarily not liking bullies and wanting to serve, but wanting to be the man, wanting to be like the alpha and all of the recognition that comes with it. Really quickly, sort of some of our sort of villainous characters, both Zemo as well as Carly Morgenthau and the Flag Smashers. This is, I'll talk about the Flag Smashers in one sense, because I really liked Carly. I liked the actress, Erin Kelly, and the performance that she gave. And it was very interesting to see this little white Irish girl, essentially kind of like playing this type of role. The one kind of thing that I'm still on the fence about is I never felt a real sense of dread or menace from the Flag Smashers. In the Winter... No, not the Winter Soldier. In Civil War, Bucky says that Hydra had, like, this sleeper cell of 5 super soldiers and described in detail what just 5 of these people could do. You know, like, can bring down an entire nation overnight and all of their with all of their skill sets and everything like that. And now we've got more than 5. I mean, she stole, like, 20 serum, but I think it... Maybe at the most she had like 8 or 9 people in her crew. But I never, and maybe part of it is just because they weren't trained soldiers. They were just normal people. So they had the abilities, but not the training or the methodology. But I never felt like this was necessarily a threat, a danger worthy of the Avengers. But I liked their performance. I liked their idea. I wish we knew a little bit more about the conflict between them and the GRC. I wish maybe that whole reasoning was explained a little bit more clearly, you know, for the kids in the back who only half paid attention like me. but overall, I liked them. I just kind of felt like as the major villains, I kind of thought they were comparatively weak compared to other antagonists that we've seen. So, am I alone? What did you guys think about the Flag Smashers?
I think the rest of them were kind of weak, but I think that was kind of the point, because as the episodes progressed, you get the impression they were along for the they believed in her original mission statement when she blew up that GRC building with all the people inside. They were like, "Whoa, you know, we're way in over our head," and I don't think any of these people. You know, I mean, like in the last episode when she says, you know, one world, then they all just don't say anything for a while. And she has to say it again, one world. And they're like, yeah, one people, you know, let's just, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, hail Hydra, whatever, you know, that type. I mean, it's kind of like this, you know, these reluctant, you know, members of this this group that she's had. So I think that's one reason. And I think that's one reason why Sam kind of had the point that she, you know, the point he kind of made at the end that she was just a, in a lot of ways, a misguided,
teenager.
Yeah. I mean, it really, they had ideals and an incredible amount of power. And if they were like an actual military unit, they would have been like a super serious threat. Yeah. I can see what you mean about them not being quite as impressive as some of the other villains, but I think the story, I really like the fact that they're still using the snap, the blip, whatever you want to call it, to move these stories forward. And, you know, it's not, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe isn't quite the universe outside your door anymore, but really, I mean, comics kind of take for granted that everything pretty much stays the same, even though there is all this advanced technology, and we know aliens exist and we know sorcery exists and it's real. And, you know, the MCU is kind of more, taking more of a like practical approach that, no, this would change everything. You know, this would, but they can still use it to mirror things that are going on in society, you know, skirmishes on borders, you know, challenges of what is a border, you know, and where do the people go on those borders? You know, I mean, so it still works in a way that can be relevant in the story. So I thought that was a neat way to go with the characters, even if they weren't quite as threatening as like Hydra or something.
that was probably the aspect that I liked the best about him, Chris, is it's essentially, you know, all the other themes, the racism themes, all these other real world themes, they address this. This was to address like kind of the Syrian refugee theme, you know, is mm-hmm. really what they're going for there. And I thought that was powerful. As far as Carly goes, I feel like she was great as an antagonist because the actress, I mean, she's, you know, like you said, she looks like a cute little teenage girl. But damn, I was scared of her. You know, she did a great job carrying that role. She was fantastic. Otherwise, the rest of them, yeah, they're pretty generic. And I think it kind of shows that this is what a super soldier would be without government resources funding them and supporting them and directing them. You know, it's like you can have superpowers, but if you don't have a government telling, you know, if you don't have the government helicopters to get you where you need to go, you don't have you can't be as effective. Now, I did read, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I did read the original plot had something to do, and this maybe this is some of the failings of it, that the Flag Smashers were going to release some kind of virus. And that had to be reworked once COVID hit. They felt like it was a little too on the nose. So again, I can't validate that. I've read it in a few places. Who knows?
Me you know, too.
Okay, yeah. It's sort of like, did Mikey really drink, you know, Coke and eat Pop Rocks? Who knows?
What about Baron Zemo?
Man, that guy can dance.
How insane is that that's become such a thing? It's crazy.
I always actually, for a lot of people who just kind of forgot him, he was always one of my favorite villains, true villains in the MCU, even though I have argued that Tony was the primary antagonist of Civil War. Zemo was the real villain, and I always thought he did a great job. I liked Daniel Bruhl as an actress, or as an actor, sorry. And I thought that he was one of the few villains who absolutely achieved what he wanted. And it's funny because I think that is continued because I was like, where are they going to bring him into the story? What purpose does he have? And I like that he seemed to be rather just content in jail, both at the beginning and then at the end when we flash to him again, because he kind of like, no, he's done his job. If he has a mission, if he has a crusade, it's not to destroy the world. It's not to take over the country or something like that. He wants, he has this sort of like, hatred of these sort of supremacist or fascistic groups that he sees the Avengers as one of those because of their absolute power and their might because of the physicality. So that he like all he wanted was to kill all the super soldiers, and once that was done, he was like, yeah, you can turn me back into the Wakandans.
His performance was just fantastic. I mean, it is a little odd. I mean, I will agree with Shag. It's like, you know, I did have to kind of, okay, reset my brain that they didn't just like instantly turn him in, like after he like turn him back in after he killed the scientist, you know, the chemist. And they kept following him around, but he did have the intel, you know, they did break him out for that reason. So I mean, I can kind of see that, but he was so great in it that I'll forgive some stuff that was maybe a little, maybe they should have like maybe reworked that just a little bit here and there. And his agenda is, it is so unique. And I mean, you can totally empathize with this guy. I mean, the Avengers, because Tony Stark created freaking Ultron, and Ultron freaking dropped Sokovia, picked it up and dropped it back down, you know, I mean, and so, I mean, you can totally see where this guy's coming from. I mean, his beef is real. So, you know, you can't blame him. And I mean, I think somebody said he's like a less altruistic version of Batman. And then his freaking butler did his dirty work for him. He's got his own Alfred. He's got his own damn Alfred, you know? So it's like, hell yeah, he's Batman. You know, it's like...
I liked when they found out that he was an actual baron, and they're like, "You're rich." He's like, "Yeah, I was royalty before the Avengers blew up my country."
Yeah, and even got to see him in the mask. No adhesive X though. No super glue for his face, but he's too charming.
That's the moment I started to like him. Actually, was when they're walking towards his plane. That was what, because for me, I do really like's a bad way to put it, I guess, but I am really invested in the character of Baron Zemo from the Thunderbolts. I mean, I read something like, I don't know, 100 issues of Thunderbolts, and he's kind of the leader through most of it, or at least a protagonist through most of it. And so I really engage with that character regardless of how terrible he is. And so in Civil War, I liked the actor's performance of what he was given on the page, but I'm like, that's not Baron Zemo to me. I was like, I hate this. It's not my Zemo. And then here I felt like I was seeing Zemo shooting people, killing people, getting what he wants, manipulating the costume, the rich, the mask. It's like, okay, I felt like I was getting some more of what I was hoping to see. And so now I really do hope we get a Thunderbolt series because I want to see that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it was fun. He was great. It was great to see him back in the role and getting to do more with it. And yeah, the dancing and the fact that that's become an insane meme is hilarious.
The chemist, he did kill that guy in Madripoor, and I don't know if murder is a crime in Madripoor. So
probably not. There might be a greater. They still wanted to ask him more questions. So, Bucky, regardless of the law at that point.
Yeah, you still expect them to have a higher moral code. Speaking of that and that moment, we teased a little bit about the action sequences. One of my favorite action beats throughout the whole series was actually Sharon Carter cleaning up the assassins and the bounty hunters in the shipyards in Madripoor when she was keeping them off their back while they were doing the interrogation. I thought that was a really, really fun scene. I liked her.
I'm sorry, who were you talking about?
Sharon Carter.
That was not Sharon Carter.
Well.
I don't know who that is. We'll find out, I guess, in the next series. But there's no way they've turned Sharon Carter into a bad guy. It's just not happening.
So we do find out at the end that she is the power broker, which I feel like they mishandled that. Because I feel like just like the way they talked about the power broker with personal with male pronouns in the beginning, and Zemo seemed to know who it was but then didn't know that she was that, and I kind of felt like that was just weird. But like you were saying, Shag, my personal belief, and if this doesn't come true I will riot, I think she's a Skrull imposter. So
I don't think so.
No,
I think the Skrull stuff is being reserved for the Captain Marvel space stuff. I think we're going to get the introduction of the Chameleon.
Ooh, Chameleon, that'd be interesting.
A female Chameleon, probably.
That'd be kind of cool.
That's a major Marvel character that appears a whole bunch, especially in the 60s, who we haven't seen yet. And I do really feel like the Skrull storyline is reserved for the more galactic stuff.
Well, they will be doing a Secret Invasion series, though.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Okay, yeah. Either way, I'm convinced that's not Sharon Carter.
Yeah.
I kind of hope it's not, because, I mean, you know, if nothing else, she gives Peggy a bad name, man.
Right.
You know, that's her niece. Yeah.
It's an interesting twist, though. I mean, because, I mean, we, like, other than that weird kind of awkward kiss, like, she doesn't have the same relationship with, you know, with Steve. You know, we know that Peggy is the love of Steve's life. So she's kind of her own little character, and they need to do something with her. So I was like, okay, making her a spy within the highest ranks of the government. I was like, that's an interesting twist. We'll see where they go from there.
Because in Civil War, she had no problem breaking the law and giving them their equipment back. So, I mean, you could make an argument saying, she's been on the wrong side of the government a few times now.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one problem I have back is going back to her portrayal in the Winter Soldier when she wouldn't let Hydra take over launch. She was the one stopping them from launching the helicarriers with the weapon to target all the lack of a better term, metahumans, you know. So all the problem people that Hydra had, you know, like Stephen Strange and people like that. So
just call it what it was. They would target Ryan Daly. We know this.
Right. Yeah. But
definitely think it was in the last couple of years that she's been replaced by a Skrull. So, and we'll find
out. Yeah. I mean, but if she hasn't, I mean, you kind of understand. I mean, really, Steve didn't blip. So why in the 5 years in the end game, why didn't Steve look Sharon up and try to clear her name then or something? You know, you kind of like if she really was left behind, you could understand why she would go bad, quote unquote, you know. So, I mean, I don't want it to work, but it actually kind of does. I can see it working, you know, to a point. I mean, it's. The thing about it is, it was kind of telegraphed, and I've heard some people say, well, it was obvious it had to be her, unless they really just came out of left field and like, oh, it's Arnim Zola, you know, he's the power broker, you know, or something like that. But at the same time, the twist at the end that it wasn't revealed that Sam and Bucky still don't know, like we know, but they don't know, that was a twist in of itself, and I thought that twist worked really well. And now she's going to go back to work and for a SHIELD or the CIA or something. Oh my God, that's horrible.
Mm-hmm. So. I actually had to go back and check. I'm like, why aren't Sam and Bucky turning her in? And then I had to go back and look. I'm like, oh, they weren't in that scene with Zelieper and Carly.
No,
I'm sure they were.
And Cindy's like, why didn't Carly say something to Sam? I was like, she was too busy dying. She, you know, she's like, she didn't have time to go, oh, by the way, that Sharon over there, she's a power broker, you know, and then keel over. So.
All right. Really quick, the last two, I do want to mention one thing about the Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Now you're just bragging doing
you're
that.
You're just showing off now.
I know.
Now, the sudden appearance of Julia Louis-Dreyfus in the episode 5 came out of nowhere and confused a whole lot of people. This will be another spoiler upon a spoiler, so apologies if this ruins something, but it's not really. I'm just going to throw this out there because they did a whole Vanity Fair article about this. Apparently, that was not supposed to be Julia Louis-Dreyfus's first appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, in a different world, this episode would be like 7 or 8 months late because Falcon and the Winter Soldier would have come out last September or October. And there would have been one Marvel project to come out before that. And that would have been the movie Black Widow. Apparently, right. According to Vanity Fair, her character, the Contessa, was supposed to debut in Black Widow. They are not saying that she will definitely be in the movie, because now with the changing structure, something may have changed, and she might not appear in that movie. But at one point, she was supposed to be, and she was supposed to debut in Black Widow, and this has led a lot of people to speculate what her role in that movie might be, and then with what you see her doing recruiting the U.S. agent at the end of this one, some people are kind of putting together like what type of role she might be having or where she might go in the future.
So I guess she goes back a long way. It looks like all the way back to 1968 or so as a character.
The character Contessa Valentina Allegra de la Fontaine? Yeah, she way back to like Nick Fury stories, yeah.
Yeah, she's Steranko. Yeah, Steranko character. Yeah, so she was Nick's love interest as well as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent back in the day, but I didn't know they apparently made her into a villain in the more recent comics, so
yeah, she became Madam Hydra.
Yeah. But I don't think that was a permanent change. I think that also might have been ahead. So yeah, some people are like, oh, she's Madam Hydra. She's secretly a bad guy. It's like, I wouldn't quite call her a bad guy yet. I don't think she's the evil Nick Fury. But
according to Marvel's website, it says she's a consummate master disguise, as seen when she fooled top spy agencies into believing that she was Madam Hydra. So yeah, that implies that, yeah, she's the top of the spy game, like you said, a Nick Fury contemporary.
Right. So. Okay. Shag, you had other thoughts on Isaiah Bradley.
Well, I just feel like we had to come back to it. That was, and maybe we've already said it, I don't know, but it was so powerful. I mean, every time Carl Lumley was on the screen, damn it, I cried. Possibly twice in each scene. The guy carried so much power. I could see all of everything he talked about, whether it was his delivery or the script, I don't know, but I could totally picture everything that happened to this man. I felt for him. It really pushed forward this thought process that made us question, you know, can a black man be Captain America and why shouldn't he be? And it really, you know, that I felt like that drove a lot of the race related questions in this. And I feel like each of us in our own way feel like we're not part of the problem. We're part, you know, we're good people, I hope. But it does make me sit there and watch this and think back, you know, okay, wait a minute. I'm a white guy, potentially a privilege. What am I not doing that I should be doing? What am I doing by omission rather than maybe not actively doing bad stuff? But what am I doing by omission? And just those parts were so powerful and so thought-provoking. And I mean, just wow. And then they introduced Eli, by the way, his grandson, for those of you who aren't keeping score, that is Patriot from Young Avengers, which is a project they're working towards as well, which is also super exciting because I love the Young Avengers.
I'm trying to think who from the Young Avengers they haven't introduced yet. I guess
Kang, Iron Lad Kang character.
Yeah, and Kate Bishop we will see later this year in Hawkeye. But everybody
else? We've gotten Speed, we've gotten Wiccan, we've gotten Eli, Patriot, we've gotten Stature, which is Ant-Man's daughter. Yep. But yeah, just the Kang character. And eventually he left the team anyway, so they don't really need him. Although he's what brought them together originally. They don't need that character.
Right.
Well, and some people suspect that the Iron Lad might be the kid from Iron Man 3 that showed up at Tony's funeral on Endgame. So
I thought they might be doing something with that. They will be doing Riri Williams as Ironheart, so they might have her instead.
That would make more sense, actually. Yeah. So, Eli, did he move you guys, I assume, as much as he did me?
Oh, Isaiah, yeah.
I was like, I thought Eli was fine. I wouldn't say Eli was
fine, but he's still calling Sam Black Falcon when he comes to the door. It's like, you need to learn some respect or something.
Right, right. Sorry, Isaiah. Well, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Carl Laemmle was the voice of the Martian Manhunter on Justice League, in Justice League Unlimited. So, previous superhero role, and he was Mantis, you know, that short-lived live-action series. So, we cover Justice League on JLU Cast, so very familiar with him. And I think I heard him say he was working on a project that he couldn't talk about when he was on Michael Rosenbaum's podcast last year. And this was it, I guess. And oh my God, I mean, yeah, he just the delivery of his lines, the fact that he was just like trembling with just like anger and resentment in everything he said to Sam in almost every scene up until this last episode. I mean, just a powerhouse, knock you on your ass performance. It is just, I mean, and him and Anthony Mackie had some great chemistry together. And just, I mean, those scenes just alone are just, yeah, I mean, they floored me. And yeah, I got me, Cindy, and Danny all watched it last night, and we all got misty-eyed, you know, during those scenes. So, yeah, I mean, just fantastic. And what a great way to integrate that story, from the Truth miniseries into the show. I mean, I know they moved it up into the Korean timeline, which actually I kind of like that, because in that way it doesn't, you know, maybe this is, you know, this is me being the sacred comic guy. It doesn't sully like Erskine and the actual people who turned Steve into Cap and sully Steve, but it also still doesn't take any away from his story, Isaiah's story either. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that they bumped it up after Steve, and that way Steve, you know, he had no idea this happened, and you know, I'm glad, because I mean, when they first brought that up that they were going to do that story, I'm like, ooh, I mean, I don't mess with my first Avenger. I love that movie, you know. You know, maybe that's a little too precious of me, but I kind of felt that way. So I'm glad they were able to not take any power away from it, but find a way to work it into the MCU. And just, yeah, he was just wonderful in that role, and I hope we see him continue to see him again as kind of a. As kind of an advisor to Sam, even though Sam's probably going to ignore a lot of what he says, tells him to do, but just as a sounding board. Yeah.
I liked at the end, like, he hasn't totally convinced him. Like, one of the last things that he says in the last, he's like, well, you're no Nelson Mandela, you know, or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. No Malcolm, no Martin, no
like,
Nelson.
He's like, yeah, I see what you're trying to do, but he hasn't, he's like, I can't forget my life experiences and all those years, but I mean, God, like, talk about a heartbreaking and moving performance. Like, I really hope Carl Laemmle gets like an Emmy or Golden Globe nomination or something. Yes. When he says the world will they will never accept a black Captain America, and no self-respecting black man would ever want to be it, or something like that. It hurts. And again, thinking about the freaky kind of timeliness of this show dropping when it did, you know, I mean, the release of the show was delayed in part because of COVID, but the other thing that was been going on the past year is the Black Lives Matter movement, which obviously started years ago, but really picked up almost a year ago when a man named George Floyd is murdered and it is filmed for the world to see, and it becomes a global phenomenon. And this show is airing in the shadow of the trial of the police officer, Derek Chauvin, who killed him. And to have that man convicted of murder on 3 counts 3 days before the series finale of the show, it's a freaky parallel that these things are happening at the same time. But it shows you what is in the zeitgeist and the moments that we're speaking to, and the incredible raw talents of the filmmakers, the writers and directors, to be able to pick up on the struggles and what is happening in their world and our world, and putting it on the page. Because, I mean, you're going to have people complain that this show was preachy and heavy-handed. And those are the people who were never going to like it and never going to like a black Captain America anyway. But for anybody who was of an open mind or thing, like, I mean, I didn't think so. I thought it didn't seem forced. It just felt true. It felt authentic, and it felt of the moment, and it really powerful in that way.
Yeah, Chris, same. I think you said in some. I was going to ask you, Chris. You talked about the woke concept in Marvel of the 60s. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, I mean, I was reading some complaints on some boards I go to about people saying, "Oh, well, it's all woke and everything." And like Cindy said, well, people who complain about being woke just want to keep hitting the snooze alarm, you know. In the late 60s, you know, with the introduction of characters like, you know, Black Panther to a point, but specifically the Falcon and you know, the story that Stan did in Daredevil, I mean, they started to address the civil rights movement. I mean, yeah, did they come right out and just, you know, like, I mean, like have a series dedicated to it? No, but they peppered those, you know, the headline stories of the day into the comics. Stan spoke out against, you know, racism, spoke up for equality in Stan's soapbox. Hell, it was repeated everywhere during the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, on comic boards and stuff. It's part of Marvel Comics. It's part, being relevant is part of Marvel Comics. I mean, and I couldn't help but feel a little bit, Sam and Bucky's, you know, journey felt a little bit like the hard traveling heroes at DC, a little bit of Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill, even, you know. So, I mean, it's baked in, man. So if you, like, oh, get this out of my...
The freaking cover of Captain America issue 1 is him punching Hitler.
Exactly. He's punching Hitler before the U.S. even got into World War II, a year before the U.S. entered World War II. So, I mean, he's punching Hitler. I mean, exactly. I mean, you know, Captain America created by two Jewish guys. They got him punching Hitler. What does that tell you? So, yes, exactly. And the fact that Sam says, you know, every time I pick up this shield, I know there's a bunch of people who hate me for it and everything. That's like so meta that Anthony Mackie's like going ahead and addressing. I know some of you haters hate this, but screw you, basically, you know.
Exactly.
I loved that. I loved it. And also, because of what happened on January the 6th, when you had some of these people storming the Capitol with freaking Captain America iconography, and you had Neil Kirby, Jack Kirby's son, coming out and saying, "You don't know Captain America. My dad would basically, like, he would take you out around back and beat your ass for, you know, doing that." And we know he would, too. And, you know, the fact that a black man is now more the MCU's Captain America, that is a wonderful F you to all those guys. And I just love it. So,
and I think all six episodes were all leading to that. It just, well, even if you weren't on board with that or something originally, the journey they go on is amazing. And you get so wrapped up to it. By the point the Falcon shows up in the Captain America outfit, I'm cheering. I mean, not that I was opposed to it to start with, but it just, the story built so well and so organically, and you wanted it, and you want it. I remember at the end, watching the end of the fifth episode, I'm like, I really, really, really want Falcon to become Captain America. I still wasn't sure if it was going to happen or not. So the beginning of the sixth one, I just, you know, I was cheering up and down. Now, I think the costume needs a little work, but I know it's comics faithful and all that. I think it kind of needs something. Well, no. I think it needs the upgrade that like Chris Evans got a nice upgrade from Avengers to, like, by the time Civil War came around, that costume got it. I just think he needs a little upgrade. That's all. But go ahead, Chris.
I will say this. I think one reason why they went – this costume is definitely a little more comic booky, a little more, I will even say, garish to a point than about any other MCU suit, maybe except for Spider-Man. But I think that's kind of the point, because Sam's basically saying, you know, he's wearing the brighter colors. He is fully embracing, you know, he's meeting it head on that, yes, I'm wrapping myself in a flag. I am representing this country that was built on my people's backs. That's what he's saying, you know, and that's one reason why it is so bold, why it is so loud. It's like, yes, I'm Captain America, deal with it, you know, and I'm not hiding it. I'm freaking living fireworks, basically, you know. And I think that's one reason why they went so saturated with it. It does look like the comic, of course, but I think one reason why they didn't dial it back from that was because you can't ignore this man. You can't ignore that man wearing that costume. And honestly, all the white around him does clearly show this is a black man. You know, this is if he was wearing blue, you might kind of lose that. But with that, the contrast of the white mask, the cowl, and his skin, it's like, boom, a black man is Captain America. You know,
I'm not opposed to the white and all that. I just think that it needs a little design aesthetic. I mean, because again, I'm using Steve's costume as an example. I mean, Steve's costume in Avengers compared to Civil War, it's still the same basic design. They just found ways to tweak it and make it look better. I think the same could be done for Sam to, you know, still keep all the white, still keep the red, white, and blue. But, you know, there's just ways to tweak it and make it not quite so like motorcycle jumpsuit looking.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, they'll probably tweak it. They tweaked Steve's costume in every movie pretty much.
That's true. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys.
We've either worn him down or he has to go.
No.
And here's a question for you guys. I did a little pre-reading before this, and I actually found a lot of articles online. Like, I found a lot of haters. I just kind of discounted them. But then I found a lot of articles saying that this story was pushing forward a lot of really of the right things, but they felt the story had weak writing. I think I'm too caught up in the roller coaster of it all. I'm just like, I love it. I love it. I love it. I don't think I can see clear enough to see if that's there. Again, they weren't knocking the fact that they were addressing the various issues of social issues. They were just saying it was written kind of weak. Did you guys get that sense at all? Or is it just these people out there?
I didn't get that at all. I thought it was written really well myself. I mean, maybe I'm dense or something, but I thought it was very, very well written, and the characters were very well fleshed out. And I thought it was it didn't seem like that the writing was like an afterthought at all or anything like that, personally.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, considering... I mean, so like the last five movies or whatever were written by the same two guys, the two
McFeely and the other guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think. Yeah.
The same writing guys, the same writing team who did all three of the Captain America movies and the last two Avengers movies. So certainly a lot of the movies like that preceded this with these same characters have had kind of one voice to kind of carry them through. So I did feel like maybe some of the jokes didn't land as hard, or it was a slightly different feel. I did not feel like it was badly written at all. No, I could tell it was a different writer and like a different voice, but not an inferior one.
The last review I read that was written in Entertainment Weekly, so it's not like it was just some nerd's blog or nerd's podcast like us. I didn't see it either. Maybe people can put in the comments if they felt it was a weak. Because I've seen some people's mixed reviews online where they're saying, it's okay, it's not for me, or whatever like that. And the easy thing is to immediately discount and go, oh, well, they're racist. That's why they don't like it. Well, that's not fair. You know, not everyone who didn't love the show isn't racist. They just, maybe it wasn't their job, their vibe. Maybe they didn't like it. Yeah. So I just was curious on other thoughts outside of our totally eyes full of red, white, and blue, so excited about it.
Now, a lot of people thought that this was just the first season. It is not. That's not the way Marvel is constructing their, Disney Plus series, at least not right now. They haven't announced that. These really are standalone sets, so this is one completed piece, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But they did announce they are now developing a Captain America 4 with the same, I think the same head writer is working on developing that, and bringing somebody else too.
So excited for that.
I mean, like, any expectations? Anything that you would want to see from that one?
Honestly, I hate to say it, I would have rather seen another series, because you get 6 hours that way at least.
That's true.
Yeah.
You have to cut it down to a third.
Yeah, I mean, I love the movie. The movies are fantastic, but hell, I would, at this point, I think I prefer the series format, and I love anticipating. I get to see, it's like getting to see a new Marvel movie every week, even if it's a short one. In these pandemic times we live in, we're working from home, and Danny and I, like, it's lunch break, let's watch Falcon and Winter Soldier, yay! I mean, we're working all week,
The downside of that is we're all in a private chat thread, and every Friday morning, Chris and I have to remind Ryan not to spoil the damn thing, because he watched it at, 3 in the morning or something.
Ryan freaking spoiled Batroc was in the first damn episode.
And he spoiled the marching band of the second one. Thank you, Ryan.
That wasn't a big deal. Oh, the marching band playing the Captain America theme, that wasn't a big deal. I am sorry.
It was to me.
I am sorry. I have an incontinent dog that wakes me up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And once I'm up, I'm like, well, I might as well watch the show before Twitter spoils it for me. So, yeah, that is
the
that
WandaVision
is my...
spoilers. You spoiled the whole Halloween costume just because your sex fantasy of Wanda took control.
I do not apologize for that.
I wouldn't either. I will say Cindy definitely appreciated all the scenes of Anthony Mackie either shirtless or working out. So.
There's some sexy men in this show. There's no denying that.
The MCU has been very beefcake friendly.
to answer your question, the movie, what would I like to see? I want to see, obviously, more of the buddy cop stuff. I don't want them to leave Bucky behind. I don't think they would. I would love to see it more with Zemo as well, maybe becoming more of an antagonistic again. Not that he's a bad guy, but just seeing the world differently, whatever. But I like Chris. You know, I like what Chris said. I'm going to miss spending an hour with Sam's family in Louisiana, because I love those scenes. Like the last episode where they're having the big party and Winter Soldier sitting there just having a conversation at the same time. He's got his arm out. Yeah, and all the kids are just hanging off his arm because he's super strong. It was hilarious. I mean, I loved all that stuff.
You know, one thing we forgot to mention is, you know, Torres, Sam's buddy, becomes the Falcon
in the comics. Yeah.
What? Yeah, so we might spoiler there, Shaq. He's the new Falcon. So Sam might have like three sidekicks, Bucky, Patriot, and this new Falcon by the next movie.
I don't get the feeling Patriot likes him that much. I think Patriot will be more relegated to the Young Avengers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, as silly as the concept is, Shag, you put it, the Serpent Squad or the Serpent Society. Ever since Kevin Feige fake promised that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I do want to see that. Also, from like the Captain America lore and the old stories, when Jack Kirby came back in the 70s, I think his first issue had the Mad Bomb thing with the plot where basically just starting riots in the streets and stuff like that. I think that could potentially be another very timely thing that they could do something like that and just have Sam and Bucky dealing with it instead of Steve and Sam.
They could do Hate Monger too.
They definitely could.
Give me Baron Blood, damn it. I want some.
Oh my gosh.
If Steve can't do it, let Sam decapitate that son of a bitch on camera. I want to see that.
Oh, hey, you know what? They're Mahershala Ali is going to play Blade. They could do a Blade and Black Captain America team up movie with Baron Blood. I agree. Like, I mean, as much as this story seemed to really, I mean, the focus was on Sam and his journey to accept within himself that he was worthy of being Captain America and that Steve was right to trust him in this. And now that is, I do also like that within that there seemed to be Bucky's somewhat more quiet journey of realizing that in order to really redeem himself, in order to make amends for the crimes that he committed, he has to, you know, serve the people. He has to have a higher calling. And he actually mentions that to Carly when he's like, you know, all I've ever done is fight for causes that were bigger than me. And I failed twice. But I think like in this sense, he thinks that now his continued service is being Sam's right-hand man and continuing that tradition of helping him out and making him the best Captain America that he can be. So I think that'll be a very interesting journey together. And just seeing the two of them together on the docks, just looking off at the sunset, I thought that was a great little capper in that moment. So I'm really happy and really excited to see where they go with this. And in about a month or so, or maybe 2 months, we will be getting the Loki series with Tom Hiddleston back, and I have no idea where they're going with that one.
You know, I keep thinking that they're going to, you know, I know they're supposed to introduce Kang in the new Ant-Man mm-hmm. film, but I wonder if they won't, like, at least tease him in this with the whole time travel thing. And some of those faces on the wall in that trailer look like Kang. So, I wonder if we won't get some Kang action. So,
might, definitely could.
In summation, I thought this thing was absolutely fantastic. For the people who were haters and said, no, WandaVision was so groundbreaking and this was more of the same, screw you people. You can love both. They're just different. You know, and we all know Falcon and Winter Soldier were supposed to come first anyway. But they're just different. You can love both of them equally. There's no reason you have to pick one versus the other. They're both fantastic.
I do. I love them both for different reasons. And, at the end of the day, the Disney could have just delivered an action. Marvel could have just delivered an action series that maybe paid a little lip service to the idea of a black man as Captain America. But man, they dug in and really created a thought provoking series that it literally did make me think. Like you said, Jack, it literally made me kind of stop and think. You know, of my place in the world, and the things that go on, and and how I feel about him. And I mean, hell, if a show about a guy that's got wings and throws a, you know, metal shield around can do that, that's some pretty damn good work. I'll just say that. So,
and the next generation of kids are going to run around with trash can lids or whatever, and for them, Captain America's a black guy, and that's awesome. That is absolutely wonderful. I think that's great.
Yep, exactly.
All right, people, thank you so much for listening to us. Shag, Chris, thank you so much for joining me on this very expedited and impromptu discussion and review of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or Captain America and the Winter Soldier, or Captain America and Uncle Whitey. I'm going to make that happen. Listeners, you can find all three of us. We're not going to plug all our individual shows. I'm going to take a page out of Rob's book here. You can find us all over the Fire and Water Podcast Network. We've got tons of shows there. In the meantime, thank you for listening to this episode of FW Presents. If you enjoyed our discussion, please support the show on social media by liking or favoriting the post on Facebook and Twitter. Leave a comment on the episode post, which you can find at fireandwaterpodcast.com, or go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a nice 5-star review for FW Presents or any other show on the Fire and Water Network. And if you really, really love us and you want to, you know, give us a little bit of extra cheddar, consider sponsoring the Fire and Water Network on Patreon. For more information, head on over to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. As always, thank you for listening. And do we have a good sign off for this one?
Until Captain America 4, Steve Rogers on the Moon.
I really, really, really want that to happen. Like, he'll be up there with the Watcher or something like that, or chilling on the Blue Area. Cause we're